Hello, everybody. Happy Friday. Thank you again for joining us on another Texas Scorecard Friday Roundup. I'm Brandon Waltons, the managing editor of Texas Scorecard, and we're going to look at a few of the big stories from TexasScorecard.com this week. As always, if you're watching live on Facebook, please feel free to leave your questions or comments. We'll try to get to those at the end of the program. But first, I don't want to waste any time. I'm going to be joined right now, Kerry Cheshire with Texas with Fiscal Responsibility, to hit a few of the big stories, a kind of a lightning round, if you will, that we saw on the state level. And I think the first one, as we know, Kerry, we've got the Republican Party of Texas convention coming up here. It's on the horizon in July. This is a time when grassroots members of the Republican Party create the platform. And there's always a concern that when they create this platform, that do lawmakers actually follow it? Or are they actually keeping them accountable to it? And we've actually seen news recently that you've essentially got two Republicans that are saying, forget the platform. I'm going to join with Democrats on an LGBTQ non-discrimination effort. Explain a little bit about that.
Well, that's right, Brandon. We've got Sarah Davis out of Houston and Todd Hunter out of Corpus Christi announcing that they're going to partner with Democrats to push so-called non-discrimination language through the state, official legislation that, you know, kind of really creates another protected class for now people based off their sexual habits. This is something that the Texas GOP platform is very, very clear on, to where they've said that we don't want more protected classes. We want government to treat everyone as individual citizens and citizens to be held to the same account. You don't see any outrage, though, from Texas GOP Chair James Dickey, Greg Abbott, or any of the people who are, you know, kind of currently going around chastising them.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. Chastising folks for some of their statements. Here we have something that betrays a deep contempt for the fundamental principles of the Texas GOP, for the platform that we voted on and will vote on this coming July, and not a peep out of them.
And, you know, when we talk about these LGBTQ non-discrimination ordinances, look, it's not, you know, a belief that, oh, people should be able to treat people terribly, do whatever they want. The real issue here is that there really is a religious liberty issue at the heart of these.
Well, that's absolutely right, Brandon. And we see problems in our society when government treats some people different than another. Okay, we need more uniform inequality under the law, right? That's what we're supposed to have. And instead, we have protected classes, we have hate crimes, we have other things that get in the way of people learning to treat each other like individuals, that we're all made in the image of God, and everyone has human dignity, and everyone should have agency. And that these laws actually diminish human agency, dignity, and liberty rather than enhance it.
Right. And so while you've got those two lawmakers, Sarah Davis and Todd Hunter, out there saying they're going to defy the party platform, you've also got a growing number of lawmakers right now speaking out against this contact tracing agreement. I mean, this has been the story now for the past couple of weeks. You can't escape it. But you're seeing more and more lawmakers come out and tell Governor Abbott that he needs to cancel the agreement.
Well, that's right, Brandon. You know, we've seen a trickle, and now it's a ever growing tide of lawmakers coming out saying, hey, this contact tracing stuff, there's really not a way that it can be implemented such that Texans' First Amendment civil liberties are protected, where you have the right to talk to people and not have the government snoop around. It's a pretty concerning thing when you think about, oh, I could get coronavirus or something, and then the hospital or DPS could come and take my cell phone and find out every single person that I've spoken to and been in person with over the past month. And just, I have no control over that information. They can just go grab it. And you've seen tech companies and you've seen lawyers say, oh, well, privacy rights will be protected. But we've seen time and time again, when you have personal information become entangled with government databases, it's very hard to protect the privacy of people involved.
Yes. And so, you know, you've got this deal. It's almost $300 million. There's been a lot of opposition to it. Who's all come out against this? I know you've got Senator Bob Hall, but you've got a lot of other folks as well now.
Yeah, you had Senator Bob Hall. You had Tony Tinderholt. You had members of the Texas House Freedom Caucus taking a pretty strong action for the first time in a while, a very welcome action with grassroots folks. And you've had a lot of criticism from kind of routine lawmakers, folks like James White, James Frank, who have not called for an outright, you know, kind of revocation of the contract, but have said, hey, there's some serious concerns right here. And that's on top of the concerns that you've had from grassroots leaders all across the state. I think really you're seeing a lot of these lawmakers respond to that grassroots criticism when their own constituents are telling them, hey, what's up with this? Why is Governor Greg Abbott doing this? Did you sign off on this? Were you briefed on this? The answer to all those questions is no. I mean, you know, kind of Governor Abbott did it unilaterally, such that Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick didn't even know about it until after the deal was already signed. So I think there's some serious concerns in how this all happened, and then what they're planning to do with, you know, pretty sizable chunk of change, $300 million. You know, for most people, that'd be a pretty big dent in their property taxes. You know, for La Jolla ISD, maybe you could build a few water parks with that kind of money.
And you also had Steve Toth as well come out in the letter. He's a part of the Freedom Caucus, I believe, but came out with his own separate letter in which he even kind of expanded on some of these concerns. Of course, you had the Freedom Caucus letter that said, look, we're spending $300 million. We don't know a lot about this program or if it's even something we want. Steve Toth writing a letter and actually bringing up some interesting concerns about the company that they might not even be HIPAA compliant. There might be some medical privacy concerns in dealing with MTX Group.
Yeah, there's a lot of questions about this MTX Group and the Das Nobel guy who came and founded it. I mean, look, it's this big kind of data conglomerate company that really kind of touts the fact that it can go and optimize data streams and help businesses and stuff, you know, use Salesforce, other things. There's certainly merit to some extent of that. But I think most people are probably aware that there's a lot of BS involved in a lot of any big data operations. And then when you're looking at this, I mean, it's a $300 million contract. Does any Texan not believe that if this is a worthy cause, that it could not be done for less? I mean, we see something like this, you know, but by and large, most of the appropriations that's done in the state of Texas goes through, I don't know, something called the budget, which is a hotly debated thing over every single dime and penny the state spends and has to go through the legislature. Here you have Governor Greg Abbott deciding, I'm going to enter into a $300 million contract without even getting the buy-in of any of these folks. It's a pretty frustrating thing.
And Tanya, watching live right now, so are we able to confirm the path the paper trail took of these federal funds? Did it go directly to Abbott? How can the state legislature do something if they aren't in session? My understanding is that this was a decision that was made. Of course, Abbott takes responsibility. This was a decision that was made by the Department of State Health Services with federal funding.
Well, that's right. And you know, kind of we have to go back to during all of this so-called pandemic. I don't know if it really is anymore. Maybe it's just a hysteria pandemic. You have seen kind of Abbott crown himself emperor and say that he has the authority to say which laws we have to follow, how much money we can spend, kind of up and down the board. The real answer is we don't exactly know where these monies have flowed from, that it's been said. And I probably believe that it is federal money. But, you know, kind of the whole paper trail, I don't even think the agencies themselves have those documents yet, let alone are able to remit them to us in a Public Information Act request.
Yeah, I don't know. We still have not received open records requests back. Of course, they still have a few more days under the law to respond to some of those. But Melinda says, I heard MTX, the group tasked with this, has never done contact tracing, and they do not have a HIPAA compliant system. Again, those same concerns being raised by State Representative Steve Toth. You know, there's one more story on the state level this week. I think it's pretty easy to forget that this is still happening, given all the riots and violent protests we've seen. But we've still got a coronavirus shutdown happening right now. Governor Abbott announcing phase three of that program. What does that look like? And what is the response been that you've seen from Texans on those new loosening of restrictions?
Well, that's right, Brandon. Even though the mainstream media seems to have forgotten the fact that there supposedly is a coronavirus epidemic, that people are supposed to wear masks and stand 6 feet apart. Apparently, you don't have to do that if you're out in a violent protest. If you're, you know, grabbing bricks from the pile, they're not demanding you stay 6 feet apart. There ostensibly still is a pandemic going on, and Governor Greg Abbott still has a pretty tight grip over a lot of the state. I think you wrote a really good article at TexasScorecard.com concerning the developments where you said Abbott loosens his grip on Texans. And I think that's a very appropriate metaphor. I think most people are sitting around thinking, okay, it seems like kind of this is all blown over. We've never seen any of the stuff that was prognosticated by the experts, okay? Every single one of them that could be proven wrong has been proven wrong. And I think it's pretty tone deaf for the governor to continue kind of these Mickey Mouse phases of, oh, well, phase three, phase four, phase five. Now they can go up to 65%, 75%. Now you can do more than retail to go, all of these things. Most people are pretty done with this. There's no evidence thus far that any of the fear mongering has ever panned out. And instead, you've seen when you should see Governor Greg Abbott say, hey, look, we've survived this, right? We're all survivors. We can go forward together. Everything's back open. Get after it. Instead, there's been a reluctance to give power back to citizens that many people are saying he unconstitutionally grabbed. That the Texas Disaster Act is unconstitutional, that a lot of his executive orders are unconstitutional. Time and time again, you've seen citizens rise up against this stuff. He's kind of been forced to pull back on these orders. I mean, we could sit around and kind of try to analyze what he's actually done and what might be done next in a so-called phase four or a phase five, if that'll be 2 weeks or 10 days or some combination of the two. I mean, I think it's pretty clear that all of this stuff is contrived. There's not much method to it, and it doesn't exactly build confidence in Texans. I think it's frustrating when you see that, we can throw Shelley Luther in jail, and thank goodness she was able to get, you know, kind of get bailed out by the Texas Supreme Court. But you've literally got folks in Houston who are looting and instigating riots, and they're in jail for less than 24 hours. And they're back on the streets. I mean, it's a pretty frustrating thing when you see the rule of law be imposed on people who want to feed their families, but the rule of law, you know, kind of totally discarded when it comes to people engineering violent protests and riots.
Yes. And Greg putting in the comments, just open it up. I think that's the feeling right now of a lot of Texans. Thank you for that update, Carrie. Actually, one more question for you, Carrie. I don't know, for the folks watching, what's your favorite book on the bookshelf there behind you?
Aesop's Fables, right here.
Aesop's Fables.
Highly recommend it.
Good, good. I like the Bible myself, but that's a good one. That's a good one as well. Thank you, Carrie. Now, speaking of these riots, you've got a story up now at TexasScorecard.com from Robert Montoya in our Metroplex, our DFW Metroplex. Do Dallas protest organizers actually want police reform? And so, Robert, I'm going to ask you, do Dallas protest organizers actually want protest reform?
Yes, Brand. By the way, I got to dust myself off real quick. I was out in the back burying my wallet to hide it from the higher tax bills from that contract tracing contract. So do they actually want police reform? Well, that's the good question. So I went through with Derek Cohen of Right on Crime, an organization that focuses on, criminal justice reform. And he was told me, we went through it together, 99% of the things that the organizers are demanding are just, you know, liberal claptrap stuff you'd see that are Democrat policy, you know, priorities, and have actually very little to do with police reform.
And you're talking about these organizers. I mean, these organizations we're talking about, these aren't new. These are your typical folks, right? This is ACLU, CARE, a number of these liberal organizations, right?
Yes. In fact, this is not the first time they've shown up. I was covering when last year, these organizations, they're part of a coalition. They were all arguing for reforms of Dallas's ineffective police citizens review board. But the reforms they advocated just, you know, basically kept it, you know, feckless. I mean, the police review boards historically don't work. Derek Cohen talked about mixed bag. And guess what? Minneapolis had a police review board before George Floyd. All the good that did, right?
Yeah, you're not seeing that. And now Fort Worth even, I guess, looking at creating a police review board. You spoke with Derek Cohen at Right on Crime, Texas Public Policy Foundation. Spoke with him about this. I mean, what would actual police reform look like? I mean, we've heard some talk. There's some talk in different circles about what that would actually look like. What would be a legitimate, I guess, aim for police reform?
Well, if you're looking at reform, the aim should always be transparency and accountability because, you know, police are a branch of the government. And all of us who are conservatives, we believe that, you know, government needs to be held accountable and checked and balanced. So if that's the goal, first thing you look at, most importantly, are the collective bargaining agreements the city has with police associations. that has a lot to do with how you can hold the police accountable, as well as setting high standards for things like fitness and also training. So you provide officers with a variety of tools so that the only tool they don't have is just having a gun. They have other methods at their disposal. So that's one of the most important things to pay attention to. The other thing is, do officers have what's called a Giglio or Brady file on them? That is, do they have a questionable integrity? Whereas their integrity is so questionable, the district attorney can't call them in to a court case to testify. And that's one of the things, that's probably like the only thing the organizers demand was to let such officers go. Derek Cohen said, yeah, you know, if their integrity is that questionable, you really probably shouldn't have them serving as a police officer.
I'm going to throw you a little bit on the spot here. I know we didn't talk about this, but I think it's important for folks to know you were out late at night when there was rumors or there was word spreading that Shelley Luther's Dallas Salon a la Mode was going to be a target of some of these rioters. Fortunately, it looks like they've averted that. But what have these riots looked like in Dallas over this last week?
Well, over the last weekend, I was not present in all the riots, but everyone, you've seen the images. There were massive numbers of people marching. And then, you know, police officers started using tear gas. We also saw videos of one shop owner in Dallas who got in an altercation. He was getting beat up by some rioters. So what can I tell you is, you know, there are probably a lot of people in Dallas who are protesting peacefully, but, you know, there are a lot of organizers, like particularly one of the organizers who helped put this together, Dominique Alexander. He has a history of alleged violence. Even one of his close friends says he has anger issues and he needs help. So personally, the way I look at this situation, I think there are a lot of people who are very concerned about what happened to George Floyd, but the concern is being exploited by people who just want to cause violence and also have a political agenda.
Yes, unfortunately, we're seeing that in cities all across the street. Well, thank you, Robert, for keeping us updated on what's going on in DFW. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And for our Heroes and Halfwits today, for our Halfwit, we're going to actually stay up in the DFW Metroplex. Now, here's the story. Tony Pippenspool, the controversial Dallas County Elections Administrator, announced this week that she'll be stepping down later this year after her 9-year tenure. Now, you may remember her as the elections administrator who misplaced, quote, unquote, thousands of ballots during the March election this year. But her tenure has been marked with controversy ever since the beginning. And she told this news to the Dallas County Elections Commission this week. And those are the halfwits this week. Let me tell you why. Get this. It was the first time the Election Commission had met since they appointed Pippenspool in 2011, 9 years ago. They never reviewed her performance. They're tasked with oversight. And now, get this, they'll be in charge of picking her replacement. The Dallas County Elections Commission, this week's halfwits. And for this week's hero, again, we very rarely look to lawmakers as heroes, but I think we got to give State Representative Kyle Biederman some credit this week. State Representative Kyle Biederman out of Fredericksburg, the most vocal lawmaker against the Alamo Cenotaph relocation, says the governor's leadership has been, quote, non-existent when it comes to the plan. Biederman has sent multiple letters to Abbott over his concerns about the Alamo plan, about moving the cenotaph over the past several months, but has so far received no reply. For calling out Governor Abbott's inaction, State Representative Kyle Biederman is this week's hero.
Thank you for listening to this week's Friday Roundup from Texas Scorecard. Remember, you can head to the Empower Texans Facebook page at 11 a.m. every Friday to watch the show live and get your questions in.